Good morning and welcome to the roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 11th of June. And I have to say there was a particular skip mm-hmm. in the step of all of the panelists this morning of being able to talk about the issues that we have today.
We have
very, very, very
really
exciting
meaty,
stuff.
Juicy, whatever you want to call it, stories today.
Yeah, very juicy.
I'm just going to let that sit for a second. Okay. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter, Rosemary Armeo, who is with us for her last day before her summer hiatus.
Hello.
And we don't want to hear from anybody that we kicked her out.
I want to hear that from anybody. Why is she not on anymore?
Yeah.
What did you do? Why did you fire her? Why do you hate women?
No. I love WAMC. They've been very good. I hope
they've been
back
good. Baseball has been good to me.
Very good to me. And Libby, I think Libby's coming in. She sent me a note that said I'll be there. But then I'm wondering whether she thought tomorrow. So I don't know.
You know what? You never know.
I never know. So
with anybody.
Well, right. Well, so we'll see.
We could all get hit by the bus.
There's just an element of the impromptu in this.
That's right. So we'll see if we hope Libby will be here. Because I said to her, I said, I know this is last minute, but would you like to come in and talk about Eric Cantor for an hour? And she said, I'll be there. That's how that happened. Anyway, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can join our conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And Alan will share pieces of mail from the mailbag as we go on this morning. Okay, so here we go. In one of the most stunning primary election upsets in congressional history, the House Majority Leader Eric Cantor was soundly defeated on Tuesday by a Tea Party-backed economics professor who had hammered him for being insufficiently conservative. The result delivered a major jolt to the Republican Party. Mr. Cantor had widely been considered the top candidate to succeed Speaker John Boehner, and it is the potential to change both the debate in Washington on immigration and possibly the midterm election. So with that subject, we do two things. One, we welcome Libby Post to the discussion. Good morning, Libby.
Hi, Libby.
We knew you'd be here.
It's a minute late.
Thank you very much. You're fine. We're good. Okay. And there are so many aspects of the story, so we'll try to kind of parse them out as we go through this discussion. So overall thoughts first of what this means. Alan.
Well, you know, it's so interesting from a number of perspectives. First of all, we're told that there were polls that showed Cantor 30 points out. Now, that's really unbelievable.
You're a big supporter of polls, too. I was going to ask you about that. How'd they get this so wrong?
They got it pretty wrong. I think there are some things that people do inside the polling booth that they don't tell their mothers about. Mm-hmm. They don't tell their husbands about. They just go in and they do their thing. Immigration is an incredible incendiary issue. I was coming over very early in the morning this morning listening to the BBC, and it is as strong in Great Britain as it is here. People think that the immigrants have taken our jobs away. It's nonsense, of course, but that's what they think. And it's the whole idea of the two cavemen looking at each other and saying, he's not me, get him, you know, that kind of thing, that there's always this sort of competition, and that did it. There's another thing. There's a man named Wasserman who is a political analyst. Joe, you have this story.
For the Cook Report. There isn't a story, really. He was just commenting. He made a tweet.
Who is he? Just
He's a big analyst for the Cook Report, which is one of the more famous reports.
Yeah. Which you have to subscribe to get the full Cook Report, yes, I found. Yeah. But anyway, and he was bringing in, and there were several analysts who talked about of whether this was anti-Semitism that has reared its head in the state of Virginia, and giving that as one possibility as to
He called it the elephant on the table.
And then the people, many people who have commented said that the now the the GOP Jewish representation has now gone down by 100%.
That was
the yeah.
Is that
so,
true? The,
yes.
only, the
See,
only
Jewish
the only
Jew in the
GOP
in the GOP,
GOP.
Yeah.
in
yeah.
GOP.
It's unbelievable.
No, it's not.
It isn't.
No.
Oh, okay.
It's not.
Especially since I have a letter in front of me that says
that we control
all the money.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, if only that was the case, personally. you know, the other thing about the polls.
Yeah, yeah.
They poll likely voters.
Right.
And this is a perfect example of the unlikely voter coming out.
Yeah, but by and, 30 points?
Well, you know,
18,000 people.
You know, these folks, these Tea Party folks, are not the likely voters. They're not the consistent prime voters that you look at when you do a poll.
Yeah. No, that's true. But, you know, there's also...
That could be a big part of this, too.
You know, Libby...
And arrogance.
I didn't want to stop you.
No, go right ahead.
In Massachusetts... In Massachusetts, we have what are basically open primaries.
Yeah.
If you're an unenrolled voter, right. You can vote in either party. And some people have been known to vote the least attractive person in the other party
to screw them up. Right.
It's called organized chaos or
right.
something.
Is that
like
the way it is in Virginia?
Yeah, I think it is. Because there was a congressman, an ex-congressman, Democratic congressman, who was going around trying to get Democrats to vote.
For Brat,
on the theory that Brat could be beaten while Cantor couldn't in a general election.
And it's going to be interesting because the Dems now are going to pour a ton of money into this district.
Here's the thing about this story.
Yes.
It should be such good news. You get rid of this mean, heartless, angry, horrible man. And it's for all the wrong reasons. He's not conservative enough. Well, I mean, what do we need? Attila the Hun?
This is a Republican primary.
And it might be anti-Semitism. These are horrible reasons. I love Andy Barowitz, the New Yorker humorist.
Of course, Joe's friend.
Yes, he's fantastic. His story on this is headline, Virginians pick an even bigger tool.
Right.
He wants to take away more vegetables
gosh.
From the kids.
Right.
Yeah, it's
right. The other thing is, I don't this whole immigration thing, you know, I don't believe in picking one issue as a reason for a defeat. Cantor was a lousy congressman for Virginia. He was running around being a hotshot, and he was running for Speaker of the House. He was not taking care of business
in
Virginia.
Yeah. But just, I know, Libby, it's important. But one thing we do know.
Everyone will have a chance.
One thing we do know is that when you are the Speaker of the House, or when you're the chair of the Ways and Means Committee or the rest of it, those people can really deliver huge amounts of stuff to your district, which always makes them more popular because they bring all kinds of stuff in.
Yeah, but look at Stanley Steingart.
Yep. I
okay.
Remember
look,
I'm old enough to remember.
I know.
That
all right,
yesterday.
So give us for the rest of us.
Stanley Steingart was a speaker of the assembly in the 70s.
From Flatbush.
Right. And into the 80s, and he took his district for granted. And Helene Weinstein, who is now the chair of the Judiciary Committee in the Assembly, ran a primary against him and knocked him for a loop and won because he had ignored his district, and that's what she ran on. Now, this was two good Democrats, one against the other. You know, one could say how good Stanley Steingart was. You know, I was a kid back then. But
I wasn't.
I know you weren't. But, but you know, this is another situation of incumbents taking their voters for granted.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It happens way too often.
If I had a poll that said I was 30 points ahead and had three times as much money as my opponent, I'm not sure I wouldn't have done the same thing.
You always have to go. All politics is local. Tip O'Neill taught us that. All politics is local. The only way he stays in his position is to make sure the people at home are happy. And he ignored
which was your point.
Which is my point. Right. I do think he was a lousy congressman for Virginia, and they turned him out.
I just want to throw out this fact real quick, which is that 65,000 people voted yesterday in the primary. 18,000 more than 2012.
Right.
When he won with 60.7% of the vote.
Well, they thought it was a done deal.
To my point of polling only people who they expect to come out to vote.
Here's the other thing that doesn't make this the unadulterated good news that I always thought the defeat of Eric Cantor would be. he will be back.
Tell us how you really feel.
He will be back. I mean, I can
not
see him
this
running.
Election cycle.
Not this election cycle.
Unless he does a write-in. But we all agree we don't think he'll do that.
I don't think he'll do that. No, he'll start running for other candidates now. He'll be running for Senate next.
He'll be the new chair of the Republican Party.
That's a good point. Could be that.
But yep. You know, it always, we don't know what it'll be, but we do know that this is always the kind of thing. What's the name? Santorum.
Yeah.
Remember Santorum? He gets beat.
How can I forget?
He gets beat and he says, he's going to run for president.
Yeah,
you know. And he won't be the first guy who did that. Dick Nixon did the same thing. He lost. You want to quote, you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore. He goes and he runs for president and he wins. So there is, sort of life after that.
And
unrest.
And there is some similarity between the voting bloc of Virginia and Pennsylvania. I mean, that is it's a similar,
sort of kind of maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without the Rust Belt, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I looked at the map that was in the Times and which was terrific, and it showed all the clusters, and I showed it to Lynn because she's from Virginia, and she was a little shocked too that. That it broke out this way, but what I found interesting was that the he won in the districts closer to D.C., but within Richmond itself, which is an urban community, that's what we were talking about this morning. It's an urban community where there's plenty of diversity. He lost. He lost big time, and I found that really very.
Which
surprising.
Gives more heft to the immigration issue.
I want to.
It's because it was just the Republicans voting, and so
no, it wasn't. And in fact, our regular correspondent Walker said, "I know you'll be discussing this. I just came across an item. I just mentioned it. A movement by a former VA Virginia Democratic congressman to get Dems to cross over vote in the Republican primary and vote for Bratt, the Tea Party Libertarian who."
Jeez. Is John Boehner the happiest man in America today?
I don't know. I don't think John Boehner is a happy man.
Well, yeah. Well, okay. Maybe there's that. Let's take a quick break. I want to come back and talk about labels all the way around and a bunch of different things about this particular story. We welcome your letters. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Oakwood Friends School, Poughkeepsie, New York, an independent college preparatory boarding and day school for grades 6 through 12, focusing on the individual learner, oakwoodfriends.org. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, qfcc.com. And the Brattleboro Retreat, helping people with mental health and addiction problems to make new starts, brattlebororetreat.org.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable. We are talking about the loss of Eric Cantor in a stunning upset. David Bratt, a Tea Party-backed economics professor, defeated Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, in Tuesday's Republican primary for Virginia's 7th Congressional District. We have some letters and we will continue our conversation. Alan?
Well, there is a letter from Brendan. Who says, aren't the polls done via landline primarily? I know many of the new Tea Party members in these states are my 20 to 30-year-old generation who have no landlines, nor would they be likely to answer a poll if they were asked. Well, the answer is some of the new guys, some of the better pollsters are now finding a way around that.
You can buy cell phone numbers.
Sure.
That's not a problem. You can't robocall to a cell phone. But that doesn't mean you can't call to do polling to
a
cell phone. There's
I know that it increases the price of the poll.
Yeah, sure.
If you
because you got to go buy the numbers.
Yeah,
but the thing is, they buy new numbers anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So here's another.
I got another one.
Okay, go ahead.
Want it or not?
Well, let's hold it because I want to get to the topic of one of the headlines I read said that Eric Cantor, who helped create the Tea Party, was ultimately beaten by it. Mm-hmm. And then the news analysis in the New York Times says Cantor's loss a bad omen for moderates. Mm-hmm. So what does that say if we're saying, all right, because Cantor was a Tea Party guy, and then you're now we're calling him a moderate? So how does that work?
No, you are so right. Sorry. And I got to say, I was a little ticked off by the Times, headline, which is that it's bad news for the moderates.
It's great news.
As Rosemary says, what's so moderate about this guy? He wants to take away every benefit and all the rest of it from kids and everybody else. Why is that moderate?
You know, though, after the last election when Obama got put back in, he was more reasonable than some of his cohorts about compromise. Like, he did vote for okaying the raising of the debt ceiling. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
He did anticipate and agree to some changes in immigration. He showed flexibility. Oh, my God, we can't have that.
Yeah, he was responding to what the people wanted. They wanted something that happened in
exactly.
Washington. And so he was doing what people wanted to have happen, was get something done, because it's a do-nothing Congress. And they were up against the 2014 election, so they had to do
something.
Not
to make him sound like a hero,
right.
But you were right, yeah. Compared to some of the other people in Congress.
I'm not sure. I think that the reason, getting into the motive game is always very hard. But there comes a point at which nobody wants to be saddled with the idea that there's total irresponsibility. Now, Boehner actually led the way. He had the courage to turn around and to tell them all where to go. And Cantor, as I remember it, stood up for Boehner. Backed him up over there.
By the way, Boehner easily won yesterday.
Yeah, as did
Lindsey Graham easily won yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. There was something different about this candidacy.
I've already
advanced the idea. Should I? Shouldn't I?
Yes, you should.
Yes. I think you should.
All right. I get a letter. It says, "What drives This is not today, but what drives politics in New York is the media, which Jews control. I am sickened by the fact that 3% of the U.S. population has power disproportionate to their numbers. This has got to change." And that's from a guy named Brian, he says.
What amazes me is he put his last name to it, too.
Yeah. Well, the point is that there's a lot of this stuff out there. It's terrible. It's a lie. It's not true. He was the one. What was he? He was the one Jewish, as you say, Jewish congressman in the Republican Party. People will make up lies and be despicable no matter what. And here you have the penchant for those people who are really the angriest, the most dissatisfied, to pick up the anti-Semitism. You don't have to go back any further than Germany to figure
it out. I hate this, that I have to be now sympathetic to Eric Cantor. There are many more reasons to dislike him than his religion. Mm-hmm. And the fact that that's what he's attacked on is just abhorrent to me. He was a mean, heartless, very arrogant man, manipulative, lots of reasons not to like him that have nothing to do with his
I told you the story
beliefs.
About him pushing me out of the way, right?
No.
Tell us.
Oh, where was it? It was in the Capitol, and I was going for an appointment to do an interview. This was like a year ago, and I was in the hallway waiting where they told me to wait. And he walked through, and the person who was with me was with Gibson's office, and turned and said, "Oh, that's Eric Cantor." And Eric Cantor literally pushed me and said, "Get out of the way. I'm important."
No, that's not true.
That is true.
That is true.
Get out of my way. I'm important.
Well, he's arrogant.
If he said it with a laugh, I would have said,
Oh, no. Geez. No, he was on his way.
Yeah.
So.
And he's out now. Yay! Even if it's only for a little while.
That clinches it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the problem here with this letter and using it as one of the reasons that maybe Cantor got kicked out is, and this goes back to what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, there is a rise in anti-Semitism, and it's a frightening thing. As economies contract. It always happens. Sure. There's got to be a scapegoat. And so for the Tea Party people, I think he was a disappointment. He ended up working a little bit with Obama, and he was Jewish, so he's the Jewish guy who likes the black president. I mean, you put all that kind of craziness together.
Very ugly.
And they are very crazy.
Well, we don't want to make a hero out of him.
No, we don't.
I mean, it's
we
hardly
don't
that
all.
He was sitting down there with Obama at the White House
every day. Not at all.
Know,
I mean, I was always a little embarrassed, actually.
Yeah. But could you say...
I hear you. My mom would have been, too.
Yeah. I was always a little embarrassed.
There is that point.
In my tribe.
But here again, you know, he won with 60% last time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, is it a love-hate relationship? And does it show other candidates that if you're, you know, quite possibly just a jerk... Well, all right, we're out of time. I got to go. We'll be back right after this break.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Political analysts are shaking their heads. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor was soundly defeated in Virginia's Republican primary. He was upset by little-known Tea Party-backed challenger David Bratt, an economics professor at Randolph-Macon College.
It's disappointing, sure. But I believe in this country. I believe there's opportunity around the next corner for all of us.
Cantor is the number two Republican in the House who was seeking his eighth term in Congress, and NPR's Mara Liasson reports his campaign did not see this coming.
Cantor's own internal polling had him winning by large margins. Instead, he was beat by more than 10 points. He spent $5 million. Bratt spent $150,000. Still, he was able to depose the second most powerful Republican in Washington. And this completely contradicts the storyline that was congealing around this primary cycle, that the establishment had put the Tea Party back on its heels. This proves, I think, that the battle between the Tea Party and the Republican establishment is still raging, and the Tea Party is still a major force in the Republican Party.
That's NPR's Mara Liasson. Bratt will face Democrat Jack Trammell in November. Trammell and Bratt teach at the same college. The House Armed Services Committee hears from Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel today. The Pentagon chief will be answering questions about the prisoner swap that won the release of U.S. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl in Afghanistan, who was held by the Taliban for 5 years. Iraq's foreign minister is vowing to take back the northern city of Mosul. Iraq's second largest city has been overrun by militants belonging to two al-Qaeda splinter groups. Days before Colombia's presidential election, the government there is entering exploratory peace talks with one of the country's largest rebel groups. Here's John Otis.
The National Liberation Army, or ELN, has been fighting the government since 1964.
Compatriotas, hemos decidido, junto con el Ejército de Liberación Nacional.
But in a surprise announcement, President Juan Manuel Santos said his envoys began preliminary talks with the ELN in January. The Santos government has been negotiating a separate peace treaty with the FARC, Colombia's largest guerrilla army, since 2012. Santos has made peace talks the centerpiece of his re-election campaign, but opposition candidate Oscar Iván Zuluaga claims this latest announcement is a desperate effort to drum up votes ahead of Sunday's balloting. Polls indicate the race is too close to call. For NPR News, I'm John Otis.
California's largest teachers union is vowing an appeal after a judge struck down tenure and other job protections for the state's public school teachers. The Los Angeles County Superior Court judge ruled the law harms students, especially minorities and ones who are poor. This is NPR News from Washington. Police in South Korea say they raided a religious compound in search of a reclusive billionaire, the man thought to own the company that operated a ferry that sank in April. Jason Struther in Seoul reports that sinking left about 300 people dead.
A reported 6,000 police officers entered the compound as church members held up a banner that promised they'll protect Yoo Byung-un. Not much is known about the 63-year-old businessman. Authorities believe he ran the parent company of the sunken ferry. He's also believed to head this church, which some here call a cult. Investigators want to question you about cost-cutting and corruption that might have led to the deadly accident, which killed close to 300 passengers. Earlier this week, President Park Geun-hye demanded that more effort be made to apprehend you. For NPR News, I'm Jason Struther in Seoul.
The driver of a Walmart truck charged in a fatal highway crash that also critically injured comedian Tracy Morgan is due in court today. Authorities say the driver, Kevin Roper, had not slept for more than 24 hours when he swerved to avoid slow traffic on the New Jersey Turnpike and slammed the truck into a limo in which Morgan was a passenger. Morgan suffered a broken leg, broken ribs, and a broken nose. Another passenger in the limo was killed, Morgan's friend and fellow comedian James McNair. Walmart has said it believes Roper was in compliance with federal safety regulations at the time of the crash. Again on Wall Street, stocks are lower this morning. The Dow was down 64 points, the NASDAQ off 16 at last check. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries. On the web at lemelson.org.
Support for WAMC comes from Dorset Theater Festival, Dorset, Vermont. Tim Daly stars in John Logan's play, Red, about artist Mark Rothko, dorsettheaterfestival.org. Bascom Lodge, a historic 1930s arts and crafts lodge atop Mount Greylock in the Berkshires, offering overnight accommodations, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 7 days through October 19th, bascomlodge.net. And Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, a local independent vacuum dealer of Miele, Sebo, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, and more. Sales, service, repairs, lexivac.com. Support for WAMC comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. Windy Hill Farm Nursery, Orchard, and Garden Shop, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing landscape consultation, landscape design, and installation in the Berkshires, WindyHillFarmInc.com. And Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, cosmetic dentistry utilizing Invisalign, where teeth can be orthodontically moved without braces, PadulaDDS.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We have many other issues to get to, and one huge issue that we want to talk about today. But before we do that, we want to dip into the mailbag and hear what you have to say about Eric Cantor. We go to Alan now.
Yes, yes, you do. You go to me. Yes.
who has it sure, at his fingertips?
Tom Rodenhever says, hopefully this will energize the Democrats in that district. You know, what happens is you got to really look carefully at this stuff, folks. Sometimes the Democrats, if they're in control of the legislature, I don't think they are, but I'm not sure. They do the district so that they put all the Republicans in one district so that they can't win two elections. If that's the case, and it's a very Republican district, very Republican district, the chances of that happening are not that good. But hey,
I wonder if that part of Virginia went blue in the presidential election.
I will find out.
Could you? Because I know Tidewater did, and Northern Virginia did, and that's what made the state go blue.
In 2010.
The last presidential.
Yeah, 2010.
2010, sorry. Medden
says, I think the element...
No, 2012. Right.
Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead. Medden says, I think the element of character is at play here. Cantor was a snake. He played all sides. The running joke was that Boehner had enough of Eric Cantor's knives in his back to have a steak roast. I don't think the Jewish factor was at play here as much as the character honesty double-dealing factor. Mike says there is a large grassroots movement that exists on both the left and right because these groups tend to fly below the radar. Most media sources are not fully up to date on the extent of these movements, and they pop up and camp on Wall Street or block
off a canyon, expect upsets to become more and more of the norm. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't agree, but it's interesting.
Yeah, if I were a pollster, I'd be looking at this really closely, because this is, we have been saying on the show how accurate the polls are. Even if you disagree, you're not wise to fight against them, and this is a big error.
And Joel says, I'm a libertarian, and I don't think this is a Republican versus Tea Party fight. The clips I've watched this morning, Dave Brat is not only extremely bright, but more importantly, uses common sense.
Yeah, so is Eric Cantor, though.
And is willing to put his neck out there for the good of the country. Love the show, and I'm going to miss Rosemary, parenthesis, temporarily, I know, end paren, Joel.
I'm right. Going to miss you, too.
But the question is, does he want me on all the time?
Oh, of course he does.
Yeah. And Libby needs stroking.
And by the way, Libby, yes, while dear. I have a moment, I just want to wish you and Lynn a very happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you so much, Alan. Yeah.
19 really years.
19 years. That is She's wonderful. Dying. She's sitting on the couch. She's going to kill me when I get home. But yes, 19 years. It's the best
Good
thing that
you.
Ever happened.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. So,
tenure.
Are we all in and all done on tenure. That, on that
tenure.
One?
Tenure. Tenure.
All right.
No, set us up,
a new one from Tony. No. Tony always writes, and she's terrific, T-O-N-I. The Dems will fail to get a candidate, so the only way to vote for the Democratic in the 7th is by write-in. I didn't know that, did you? In other words, they don't even have a candidate.
No, they do have a candidate.
They have a candidate. A guy named Bill Trammell. Who's also a teacher at the same college.
Yeah, which makes me wonder about Randolph-Macon College. You know, they're running all these.
A little schizophrenic, perhaps,
politically.
They're all I would like to know.
The poli sci department is running for office, for national
office. Well, no, this other guy, the guy who'd be Cantor's in the economics department. So.
Oh, that's right. That's
it'll
right.
be interesting if they're both out of the economics department. That would be fun.
Well, it would be the first time I can tell you that much.
I know.
As an
old
longtime faculty member to see, total right. civil war break out in an academic department because the stakes are so low.
And that goes right to our next topic.
Meanwhile,
doesn't it, Joe?
Back at the ranch, a California judge ruled Tuesday that teacher tenure laws deprive students of their right to an education under the state constitution and violated their civil rights. The decision hands teachers' unions a major defeat in a landmark case, one that could radically alter how California teachers are hired and fired and prompt challenges to tenure laws in other states.
Including New York.
Including Absolutely. New York. The decision, which was enthusiastically endorsed by Education Secretary Arne Duncan, brings a close to the first chapter of the case, Vergara versus California, in which a group of student plaintiffs backed by a Silicon Valley millionaire argued that state tenure laws had deprived them of a decent education by leaving bad teachers in place. Who wants to bat this first? Go, Alan.
Well, yesterday we had the new president of the New York State Teachers Union on. She's brilliant. She's wonderful, and she made the point that there are things in place so that if you really want to fire a bad teacher, you can. But of course, that's what's always been said. But you got to, if you're a principal, think about how hard this is. You've got to sit there and you've got to write down every single person's transgressions, and you have to call them into the office and you have to tell them again and again. Nobody wants to run an organization, whether it be WAMC or a teachers union or a library, by fostering that enmity. So, but this has been one of the longest things that we have seen in educational politics, and frankly, bad teachers do exist. We know that.
So if you're Carrie McGee, who was here yesterday, what do you do? How do you look at this decision?
No, this is very bad. This is very bad because the one thing that teachers are concerned about is their protections, is their tenure, and that's what a union is for.
There's tenure, and then there's tenure. And this was defeated in California, where teachers are up for tenure after 18 months. That is not enough time. And if there are procedures to get rid of the teachers, are much weaker there than they are here. And the legislature never addressed them, mostly because the teachers union batted down any changes, any kind of attempt to look at tenure. That's bad politics, and I'm glad this happened. I think tenure ought to be looked at.
Look, this is one state judge in one state.
Don't underestimate the power of this.
No, it's important. It's not a federal judge because if it was a federal judge, that would be, you know, fast track to the Supreme Court. It's a state judge. It's going to be appealed. People are going to say this is terrible. But there are reasons for tenure. I want to point that out. In other words, Rosemary is outspoken. She has tenure at the State University of New York. And we all of us fought very hard to make sure she got that tenure, because she's exactly why we have tenure, to protect professors who have sometimes unpopular views, who are willing to write about even their colleagues and other things. And there are good reasons to have tenure. I've seen people fired for very bad reasons in my time.
That's the whole thing. There's no moderation. I do think that unions are right to want to protect classroom teachers from the personal problems and revenges of
revenges is
revenge,
right.
Yeah, of principals. I think that's really smart. However, it's so far the other way, and there's been no adjustment to that we've ended up here. I can remember covering education as a reporter in New York, and we always wanted to address poor teachers, and the union said, "You're not qualified to judge what a poor teacher is. You know, you have to be. You have to really know stuff. Yeah, this very evaluations are very detailed, and it's not true. You go into any school in America and say, who's the worst teacher here? And the kids will tell you.
Kids will tell you.
And there's no way to get rid of them. They stay in place. And then there's this hideous thing. Don't forget, this is why it raises it to a constitutional level. You're a bad teacher. If I have tenure and I'm a bad professor, I'm still at UAlbany, and it's some journalism students who are affected. At the K through 12 level, if you're a bad teacher, your principal shunts you off someplace else, and you end up in schools where the need for great teachers is the greatest. That's a very, very poor system.
That's the point of the ruling.
Right. That's the decision. Right. I think that there's this perfect storm brewing, to be quite honest with you about this. There are people like the folks behind this case who see tenure as being the bane of the education world's existence. There's the charter schools that are happening and are taking resources away from public schools. And there's the intransigency of organized labor around this. And I know some of my friends are going to beat me up about this. I think, however, this is the perfect opportunity for the unions to come together and come up with some new creative ways of looking at this situation, still protecting the teachers.
Right. A balance.
A balance, but protecting the teachers, protecting the professors, protecting the concept of tenure, while at the same time looking at the damage done by just passing along these bad teachers. Mm-hmm. And yes, putting them in the Bronx, or putting them in, you know, the Barrio schools in Los Angeles, and putting them in places where the kids need them the most. There's some merit to what the guy who financed the case has to say about this. Right. And those kids they're the kids that need the best teachers. You know, the fact of the matter is, I remember I had friends who, you know, were professors at the university, and once somebody got tenure, they never did a thing. And they didn't care anymore. They knew that they had a lifetime guarantee. And I think that does a disservice to the vast majority of professors and teachers who do good work. My brother's teacher's down at Borough Manhattan Community College. He has tenure. He's committed to his students, and he does his work. You know, I mean, there are a lot of good folks out there doing this work, and as in anything, it's the few bad that taint the whole pool for everybody else. So we can't say all teachers are bad, because they're not. We can't say tenure is a horrible thing. We need to look at a creative way of maintaining tenure and at the same time making sure that the kids get educated and the teachers who should no longer be there aren't there anymore.
I got to say, the idea of a job for life is just a concept I don't really like. I call for term limits. I think that Supreme Court term for life business has us guessing and playing. You know, when will she be old enough to leave? Will he be reach such a level of senility he'll finally go? This is not a good way to run any kind of operation. And I think that jobs need to be set up where there are expectations, there are evaluations. You have to live up to it. If you're not, you get a chance to improve. You're told what you need to do. That seems to me to be the humane and best way to manage.
But you do have a job for life.
I know, I'm very ambivalent about it. One thing at UAlbany, I will say, give them praise, which I don't do all the time, but I do for this in my department. I mean, since I got tenure, people have been, my bosses, my colleagues have been on my case to say, what are you going to do with it? It's taken very seriously, and you do not want to just sit back. Yeah. If you sit back and do nothing, then something's wrong.
You know, one day, Libby, down at New Paltz, under several ago president.
Brown.
Several ago president, yeah. New Paltz, who called me up right after it happened, a state senator and a state senator and a party leader showed up in the president's office and said, quote, we want him fired. And I often think that that may be the one time that tenure was probably did what it was supposed to do.
Right. It was put into place so that people who are teachers and critical thinkers are protected regardless of what their thinking is, as long as their thinking stands up to academic rigor.
Yeah, but we still have to go back to the Rosemary point. You take a look at the challenge districts and you find that the kids don't do as well as the economically superior districts. And then on top of that, you say this becomes a repository for where all of the, the bad ones.
That's a good way to punish. You put a bad teacher in a hard district.
Or it's just a natural sort of selection thing where, somebody has to be hired. You get a choice. Do I want? And by the way, now you have an evaluation process which tells you whether or not your kids are learning at the same rate that they're supposed to be. Yeah. Now, where are your chances going to be better?
Right.
In Scarsdale, or in a bad, in a difficult district.
Right. Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll come back and wrap up our conversation with the panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Union Institute and University, Brattleboro, Vermont, offering an online graduate-level certificate in alcohol and drug abuse counseling, welcoming applications for fall term, myunion.edu. The Mack Hayden Theater, Chatham, New York, continuing the 46th season of professional musical theater with 7 more shows, including The Music Man, now through June 15th, MackHaydenTheater.org for showtimes and tickets. And the Office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, Orthodontic, Cosmetic, and General Dentistry, featuring laser and digital technologies, WoodstockDentist.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Final topic of the day is a very tragic story out of Oregon. A gunman wielding a rifle shot and killed a student at Reynolds High School in Troutdale, Oregon on Tuesday morning, creating a frantic scene outside the suburban high school as police rushed to the area and students and staff were evacuated. The victim was 14-year-old Emilio Hoffman, a freshman at the school. A teacher was also injured. And then the gunman, presumably, we believe, took his own life. He was found dead in a bathroom a short time later. So it is the number here, and I found this, I saw this quoted, there were a couple different numbers, and I found this quoted, that, and this seems to be the prevailing one, today's, the school shooting in Oregon is the 74th school shooting in the U.S. since Sandy Hook. So that's a year and a half. And of course, which comes on the heels of the Las Vegas shooting, which came on the heels of the Georgia courthouse shooting, which came on the heels of the shooting of the Seattle Pacific University, which comes on the heels of the mass shooting near UC Santa Barbara, and that's all within the last month.
You know, you use the word frantic, and I have to tell you, I'm frantic now. I really am.
It seems that there is
nothing we can do against this monstrous...
There is gun control.
Yeah. And the president spoke out on this yesterday and sat down and said that he was, really, really concerned and doesn't know... Well... I mean,
What can you do?
You scoff, but...
No, gun control. Thank you, Andrew Cuomo. I mean, and we need more of it.
Look, let me tell you, I just did the math. 47 over 18 months, basically.
Yes.
That's 4 a month. That's 1 a week.
Yeah.
That's and by what the way, shootings in New York are going up, although
right.
I certainly...
One a week.
I certainly agree with you about one thing, Rosemary. This was Andrew Cuomo's finest moment.
Yes.
Right. It was as if, you know, he did what was right. And not political.
Right. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, and it's one of the good times that he's done that. But, you know, I had a conversation with somebody in my office yesterday who's pro-gun, and I'm like, enough already? No, it's those crazy people. They're all on Xanax. And I'm if they were all on Xanax, they wouldn't be shooting. I mean, it's the mentally ill who are not getting...
calmer.
Right, who are not getting any kind of care. But above and beyond that, I had a conversation last week with someone who's running for office, and she's all about... you know, a Democrat, and she's all about, you know, protecting gun owner rights. And I'm like, do you believe this? Or are you just saying it to be political because of the district you're running in? The fact of the matter is we have to get the guns, you know? It's just insane.
In addition to regulating them, we need buy back the gun programs.
We need stop.
Investigation by police of militias and these paramilitary organizations.
Nobody needs an automatic weapon.
I was struck by what the president said yesterday, saying, I'll tell you, I've been in Washington for a while now. Mm-hmm. Most things don't surprise me. The fact that 26-year-old children were gunned down in the most violent fashion possible, and this town couldn't do anything about it was stunning to me.
Right.
He's absolutely right.
The president certainly knows what the polls in this country are showing. Mm-hmm. People want gun control as a country, but somehow the whole doesn't add up to the sum of whatever.
Oh, the NRA. I mean, they no longer represent gun enthusiasts. They represent the gun manufacturers.
Yeah.
And they pour tons of money, and they're behind, like the Koch brothers. They're, you know, the strings are being pulled by the Patriots, the Tea Party people. It's all of this incendiary stuff. Eric Cantor gets defeated by a Tea Partier who's probably Mr. Gun,
an absolutist on the Second Amendment. Right.
And then no one's going to vote anything in terms of gun control laws because they're all afraid. They're all afraid.
Yeah, because politics comes before decent
policy. That's right. Compassion.
Right. Yeah.
That's right. Politics comes before compassion and doing the right thing.
Well, the truth of the matter is that any one of us sitting here, anyone out there listening, could be a victim of this today or tomorrow.
Without question.
There's no protection.
I was also struck, and we just are just about out of time, I was also struck by what the president said about this whole issue of mental health, of bringing the mental health into it, of saying, look, the United States does not have a monopoly on crazy.
It's
not the only country that has psychosis, and yet we kill each other in these mass shootings at rates that are exponentially higher than any place else on earth.
Correct.
It's
appalling.
It is appalling. And you wonder at what point it turns. And as he said, if you get 26-year-olds, like, if that doesn't do it, what's going to do
it? I've been waiting for the turning point for years now.
Well, you know, sometimes it takes a terrible catastrophe. To me, the idea that if somebody killed my kid, it would be the worst catastrophe that I could ever face. I'd never recover from it. My heart goes out to anybody who has faced this. Nevertheless, look at we got a Civil Rights Act. JFK dies. He's shot. There is this country. The country takes a look into its own soul. Maybe that's what it's going to take. I hate to think it.
But wasn't that supposed to be? Shouldn't that have
been Sandy Hook?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, again.
No, it certainly should have been. Of that, there is no question.
I mean, and you could argue Columbine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Should have been.
We have innocent children dying.
No, there's no question. There's no question. I mean, how can we be doing this? When I say I'm frantic, I'm frantic.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
We're going to leave it there for this morning. We welcome your letters, as always, and keep the conversation going. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Arimeo, we wish you a very safe travels. We hope you are safe and don't have any problems with the TSA, and you don't take anybody off. And you don't.
Yeah, that's where right. I'm
and
you,
just be careful.
And no problems in Eastern Europe.
Just be calm.
TSA.
Just, you know.
Xanax, according to her.
Xanax. I'll try that.
from someone who goes and gets patted down every time, and I get winded anywhere I go.
Ugh.
It's just part of the deal.
I won't put my hair in a bun anymore because I don't want them touching me.
And the good news is that while we are sad that we lose you, we gain Libby. Libby will be with us for the full summer, minus some days. But celebrate your anniversary and be ready to,
go full throttle tomorrow.
Alan, thanks as always.
Thank you, Joe.
And again, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.